produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today. UK marijuana liberalization leads to a decline in pot use. Marijuana use in the United Kingdom has fallen to an all-time low in direct relation to downgrading cannabis possession to a non-arrestable offense. In 2004, Home Secretary David Blunkett reclassified cannabis from Class B to Class C, and in most situations, those found in possession of marijuana receive a verbal warning. Although opposition groups have claimed a marked increase in cannabis use, the Home Office report, Drug Misuse Declared, Findings from the British Crime Survey 2005-2006, indicate that over 600,000 fewer people are currently smoking or eating cannabis. Below alcohol, marijuana remains the most popular drug of choice in England and Wales, with 8.7% of 16 to 59-year-olds reporting cannabis use last year. But in the 16 to 24-year-old age group, where drug abuse is considered more commonplace, cannabis use dropped by nearly 7%. By contrast, under prohibition in the United States, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration Office of Applied Studies National Survey on Drug Use and Health in 2003 and 2004 showed that over 30% of 16 to 24-year-old Americans reported using marijuana in the past year. United Kingdom government officials and British drug policy groups pointed to the new data as proof that reclassification and liberalization have worked, with many expressing continued concern over binge drinking issues. While simple possession of cannabis is non-arrestable, penalties and jail time can still be levied for growing or selling marijuana.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. More than 500,000 Americans are arrested each year for smoking pot. These are ordinary citizens like you and me whose lives and careers are being needlessly destroyed. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Hey, is it 420 yet? This is Rick Cusick from High Times Magazine, and you're tuned into Normal's Audio Stash.
Welcome back to the Audio Stash. Today, I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal to end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org. Wednesdays are health and wellness days here on the Audio Stash, and we have our weekly discussion about the science of cannabis with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Also, we've got some music and comedy because good health requires great music and a good laugh, too. First up today, it's our regular segment, The Garden of Wellness. Welcome to The Garden of Wellness. This is our weekly series about marijuana smokers' physical health. Take a look at the official science behind vaporization. It's a technique used for smoking marijuana that studies show cuts the risk of inhaled carcinogens. Now, most of us are familiar with the time-honored methods of smoking cannabis. Now, Now, that's the sound of a volcano vaporizer, and if you've never seen one, it looks like a crock pot with a clear kitchen trash bag where the lid should be. As the heat builds up, the bag fills with vaporized marijuana, a neat kind of show in itself. Then you take the bag off and inhale what's inside. Recent science tells us that this method, while not as handy as your protopipe or a pinner in your pack there, actually is a healthier way to consume cannabis.
It's vaporization, and that is a process whereby individuals heat the psychoactive constituents in marijuana, such as THC, and then inhale the vapor, but they do not heat up to the point of burning the surrounding matter, and that is the matter which contains most of the carcinogens in cannabis smoke.
That was Paul Armentano talking about marijuana and smokers' health earlier this year, specifically regarding lung cancer. One of the biggest myths surrounding smoking marijuana is the potential health effects. And as science now delves further into the chemistry and physiology of cannabis, the results truly are surprising.
I don't want to imply that the studies give marijuana smokers a clean bill of health here, but unlike the large body of evidence and data that we have now showing alcohol and tobacco use being causal factors in certain cancers, we do not have that same kind of data for marijuana.
Now, study after study reveals no detraction from health, but indeed, in many groups of cannabis consumers studied, there are some who seem to have directly benefited from moderate lifetime use, and even perhaps avoided things like lung cancer.
In fact, there were two large population-controlled studies done looking at that in 2005. Neither one of them found any sort of association between early marijuana use and early onset of those types of cancers.
Basis of today, carefully control temperature and speed of heat. Vaporization not only offers a scientifically proven technique for delivering a cleaner form of marijuana smoke, but it can also deliver set doses of THC to patients who need to closely monitor their intake. To me, though, and I'll be honest here, there's nothing like the experience of that freshly rolled joint, weighty in one's fingers, ready to smoke, healthy in moderation. This has been Garden of Wellness here on the Audio Stash. Next week, part one in our series about alcohol. Stay tuned, there's more to come here on your Daily Stash. Next up today on the Audio Stash, it's time to check in on the science of marijuana with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Mitch Earlywine is Associate Professor of Psychology at State University of New York. He's the author of Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and editor of the new book, Pot Politics. Mitch, welcome back to the Audio Stash again today.
Great to be back.
Always wonderful to discuss the science of marijuana with you, Mitch. And today, let's explore the differences between men and women. There was a report out last week from Morgan State University in Baltimore, Maryland, that cited a pretty big difference between men and women when it came to cannabis-dependent symptoms. What could be going on there?
There are a couple of things going on with some of the expectancies people have about what marijuana will do for them, and I have some data suggesting that women don't expect marijuana to be as happy-inducing as men might. But another thing that's curious about this study is this is based on a big data set that's been done with a certain kind of interview. And my wife actually pointed out this morning, my wife is not a user, and she said maybe these women just are reluctant to fess up to some of these dependence symptoms, and it's less cool if you're a woman to be a cannabis smoker, or less cool to admit you have tolerance or withdrawal or something like that. So that's just something I wanted to keep in mind when we're taking a look at these data.
So this is a self-reporting survey, yet there wasn't much difference in the reports of alcohol dependence. You know, is it more socially acceptable to be alcohol dependent?
What's curious about that is, I think, something about prohibition. I think women generally are more law-abiding, at least from some data sets, and the notion that it's okay to own alcohol because it's not against the law may be okay for them. I found that result a little bit startling because, in fact, women don't metabolize alcohol quite as efficiently as men, and I thought, gee, maybe they'll be at an even higher rate of alcohol dependence risk, but it didn't turn out that way. Metabolism for THC, at least across genders so far, looks like it's the same, and so maybe that's part of what's going on here as well.
So, Mitch, are there physiological differences between men and women that would somehow predetermine dependency overall?
Well, so because there's different metabolism for alcohol, that would make you think, oh, gee, maybe women are at more risk, and women do seem to show more risk for some liver-related problems with alcohol. But with cannabis, we don't have any evidence to suggest that men and women differ on their metabolism of it. So it's kind of curious that men would somehow be at more risk for dependence for a biological reason. If you think about just the subjective experience of intoxication and some of the things that women report, they tend to report less of the thrill associated with cannabis use that men often report. And maybe that's what's guiding it. In truth, being a woman is not necessarily as easy, shall we say, as being a man in some cultures and in some areas of this culture. And so perhaps the discomfort or potential risks associated with intoxication are something that a lot of women just aren't willing to do. So that might be part of it as well.
You touched on the fact that there's some data suggesting women are generally more law-abiding. Is this because they're usually the primary caregiver for children and they're afraid to lose their kids?
What's funny is how that's got such intuitive appeal, but we don't have quite the data that we need to point to that. But almost every woman I talk to says, of course, this is a concern for her, and so I think it's got a lot of intuitive appeal.
And is there any difference between men and women and the action of the placebo effect?
At least from alcohol data, it suggests that it's not very likely that there is gender difference. We don't have a lot of good placebo administration cannabis studies in the lab. Generally, women report smoking smaller quantities of cannabis, and so often they're more sensitive to it. So ironically, they can detect a placebo better than guys who have a lot of tolerance and don't expect a big effect from a small dose.
Mitch, we've been discussing general dependence, but are there differences between men and women with long-term marijuana use and any possible health effects?
As far as we can tell, some of those data are confounded with differences in cigarette smoking. But so far, there aren't vast differences in cannabis-related health problems in men or in women. But part of that is because there really aren't that many health-related problems associated with long-term cannabis use, other than dependence and, you know, the occasional respiratory cough and wheezing. We really don't have a ton of negative consequences to look at.
Mitch, this Morgan State University study talks about the risk for dependence after initial use. Why is it when someone first uses a drug, there's a big dependence risk?
What's curious about that is there's an initial response that people have to a drug. And in fact, when you talk to folks who are addicts, when they discuss their first use of a drug that they're addicted to, it's often a really intense, euphoric, you know, wonderful experience for them that they find just so intriguing. And so often those are the folks who are most at risk, and they end up getting into problematic use often within the first 3 or 4 years of when they first tried it. And with some drugs like meth or crack, it's often within a year. You'll notice from these data that the women don't seem to have the exaggerated effects that the men have. But even that, for cannabis, I think the highest rate for the men was a 4% risk of developing dependence in a particular year. This is not a highly addictive drug the way you think of, say, the opiates or heroin or something along those lines.
earlier, you mentioned some of the difficulties with this type of survey. What would be the sort of the best case scenario to gather this type of data?
It's funny because there are pros and cons to every approach. So this was a face-to-face interview. You can imagine how sitting right across from somebody you don't know well, you might be reluctant to admit to certain dependent symptoms. In contrast, I've done stuff on the internet and had people be pretty candid about particularly tolerance and withdrawal related to cannabis. But then there are, you know, other drawbacks of the internet where people feel like maybe they're not responding well, or the person is high while they're responding, or something like that. Another alternative has been to try phone interviews, which are a little more anonymous and a little less of that face-to-face demand going on. But then they know you know your phone number. They you know that the people know where you live, and so that make people reluctant to admit to certain symptoms as well.
So, Mitch, in general here, are we getting good data on this subject, interviewing a broad base of individuals?
I think we're getting a relatively good estimate as we sort of converge with these different techniques, but I don't take a ton of stock in any single study. I think the idea that maybe we've got a mild underestimate for some of the negative consequences associated with some drugs and a mild underestimate for how many people are actually using cannabis in the first place is pretty reasonable, because this is still an illegal behavior, one that people would be less inclined to confess to doing.
So if we, say, went into California and interviewed just medical marijuana consumers, could that help us understand cannabis dependence a little more?
It would be hard to then generalize to non-medical users, but I think that that would be a great way of getting at it. And in fact, because many medical users are daily users, we get a good feel for some of the hallmark symptoms of dependence. But in some ways, I feel like maybe the better thing to focus on would just be problems. Is this interfering with the way you do your job? Is this interfering with your relationships? Is this messing up your recreational time? And if not, then maybe the idea of dependence isn't what's so important so much as just is this creating troubles.
So with all the wonderful differences between men and women, when it comes to cannabis, we're actually very alike.
At least as far as long-term risk for dependence and some initial reactions to the substance. So by all means, let's celebrate our differences, but let's also remember how similar we all are.
Mitch, I want to thank you again for another extremely enlightening discussion today.
I really enjoyed it and looking forward to talking to you again.
Thanks again, Mitch. Dr. Mitch Earlywine is Associate Professor of Psychology at State University of New York. He's the author of Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and editor of the new book, Pot Politics. We have links to the books at normalaudio-com. And let's round out our show today with this little mix of comedy and music found up at podshow.com. We have links to all the artists we air at normalaudio-com. We'll hear some music from the Undercover Hippie based out of the UK and Carne Cruda, the group that does our theme here every day, and some comedy from Smart Bomb Radio.
Head round snooze on Ryland Crescent for some blow. The room is full, but snooze the only one I know. The smoker's rules require I stay around, at least for just one split. But then the bong it makes a round, soon I'm on my bed.
I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned.
Bloodshot eyes make contact briefly through the smoke. It smiles at me as though secretly I'm a joke. And then I realize that everyone is laughing at me now. Well, I just can't trust anyone. You know I need to live somehow. Yeah. Cause I'm a little bit too stoned.
I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned.
Stu, you mate. Looking a little bit green.
He's just doing a whitey.
I want to live how I came. My legs declared their independence now from my brain. And as I hide behind my eyelids, conversing on my own, strangers stares bar into me, and so we'll pack another cone and get myself just a little more too stone.
I get a little bit too stone. I get a little bit too stone. I get a little bit too stone. I get a little bit too stone.
This temporary madness has taken hold of me, yeah, yeah. Guess I should be glad this will leave eventually. Some people, they have to deal with this shit 7 days a week, yeah. But luckily, that's not the case with me, because I'm just a little bit too stoned.
I get a little bit too stoned.
Too stoned.
I get a little bit too stoned.
A little bit too stoned.
I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned. I get a little bit too stoned.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be reexamined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, a.k.a. NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORMAL, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORML, N-O-R-M-L, .org.
I'm a Mac.
And I'm a PC.
And frankly, we're getting concerned about the porn.
Seriously concerned.
I mean, it was fine when it was just your basic vanilla type stuff, but...
girls who like while drinking...
the world's most...
I mean, come on, man. I've got all the latest news and stock scores right here.
Works of art from around the globe, all the cartoons you could ever watch.
Anything but midgets for their...
girls who can't get enough...
so seriously... give it a rest already.
For both our sakes.
To the squid, why can't we be friends? Though we're of different species, we gotta make amends. Because the delicate balance of the deep blue sea on our friendship depends. Oh yeah, mamita,
el pulpo
y el calamar, bailando en lo profundo del mar. Aquí viene el pulpito, mamita, y a bailar el tendita. Hey, the squid replied to the octopus, you know I think you're right. Just because I'm a squid and you're an octopus, we got no reason to fight. So come on, let's go to the dance floor and shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it all night. Con el pulpo y el calamar, bailando en lo profundo del mar.
Ay, si yo soy el pulpito, pues a bailar yo te invito.
Gone wrong, one man and his very peculiar machine will change the destiny of a nation.
Dad, I'm going to the Frankfurter Roast.
No, you're not! No son of mine will hang out with filthy starbellies. Not today, not ever!
What would you sacrifice to change your stars?
We're still the best sneeches, and they're the worst.
If you don't hack that motherboard firewall in 3 minutes... Game over, man!
Don't pressure me!
Then the big machine roared, and it clonked, and it bonked, and it jerked, and it burped, and it popped them about. But the thing is, it really worked.
This is more than a star on this belly. The star stands for our freedom.
He's working for good!
He's working for himself! I don't know about that, McBean.
From Michael Bay and Jerry Bruckheimer, the creative forces behind Pride and Prejudice 2, The Death of Darcy, and Care Bears, a mushroom cloud over Care-a-Lot.
Sir, the team is on the ground. They'll engage within 15 minutes.
The Starbellies! They're coming!
My work is 100% guaranteed.
Guaranteed this, motherfucker.
Jerry Bruckheimer presents The Sneeches.
This film has been rated PG for parentally, schmentally, mentally violence.
That was some comedy right there from Smart Bomb Radio. We heard tracks from The Undercover Hippie and Carne Cruda. We have links to all those groups and artists at normalaudios-.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Thanks to Podshow.com for all the great pod-safe music. We feature the band Carne Cruda as our theme. Make sure you visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. That's normalaudiostash.com for more information about every day's show. Thanks to Red Aphid Interactive Media for the podcasting technology. We're back at 4:20 tomorrow. If you listen to the Audio Stash, cast your vote at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. See you at 4:20 tomorrow. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.